The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Abraham Donko. In the headlines, court bailiffs unable to serve William notice of hearing. Tony Lisa dares former Attorney General to petition General Legal Counsel on raging William saga. Load shedding exercise to stabilize possibly end of this month. Presbyterian Church of Ghana condemns legalization of same-sex marriage by its U.S. counterparts, and a hostage siege in Tunisia leaves 19 people dead. Court bailiffs were unable to serve hearing notices on businessman Alfred Agbeshoyome for the enforcement of a Supreme Court judgment against him. They were, however, able to serve Waterville Holdings, the company that was also ordered to pay back 25 million euros to the state. Court sources told newsmen that although there were many vehicles on his compound, the security detail at the place informed court bailiffs and officials from the Attorney General's office that he was not at home. The bailiffs will therefore attempt service again today, or in the event that they are not successful, the AG will have to go back to the Supreme Court to ask for an order for substituted service. State prosecutors in the Attorney General's office have received serious bashing from the public over what has been described as the frequent loss of cases because of the lack of prosecution evidence. This was more evident after the acquittal and discharge of businessman Alfred Wuyume. On Behind the News, some reasons were given for this. A former prosecutor at the Attorney General's department, Bright Akwiti, said the poor condition of service of state prosecutors must be looked at. He believes this affects their performance greatly.
It depends on the nature of the cases that go to court, and it depends on the seriousness with which the state tackles those cases. It depends also on the quality of attorneys handling the cases. I know the Attorney General's department has peculiar problems. There are various serious challenges that have not been addressed for years. The Attorney Generals come and do not address those problems.
Can you share with us some of these problems?
Oh, the conditions of service. If, as at this point, you have denied state attorney accommodation, I was given accommodation, so it was secure, in a good place too. And I had the time and the opportunity to study hard and read and prepare very well for my case. But attorneys have been denied accommodation now. All their bungalows have been sold to private persons for their private benefit. And they don't have accommodation. They're living amongst the people in various places, very far away from their workplaces. And they don't have the convenience to prepare cases to come to court. Apart from that, I do not think that their remuneration is anything to write home about. Their colleagues in private practice are doing very well handling similar cases while they are being paid a pittance. So I believe that we should look at those things too. And then I was surprised to go to the Attorney General's office recently looking for certain authorities. And during the time I was there, every attorney had his set of law reports. So he didn't have to travel from his office to another office to gain access to a law report. Surprisingly, they didn't have law reports in their offices. And I was given a copy of the report from the law reform side of the, or drafting side of the Attorney General's office. These are things that will demoralize lawyers who are working and should work well for this thing. Apart from that, what kind of education will give attorneys about the work they are going to do? Nobody trained me on how to use a computer when I was in the Attorney General's office. My computer fraud was going on. Nobody took me through what goes on in the stock exchange so that if anybody is brought in for insider dealing, I could prosecute effectively. So we're not giving insider training at the Attorney General's office. You know, things are taken for granted. And these are human beings who need to be improved by the year or by the month as society grows, as crime takes various magnified form. And then when the attorneys are on their feet, they need the support of the superior. You don't just throw them to the court. Sometimes I pity some of them when I see that they are deficient in certain aspects of the practice and the seniors are in the office.
So you are saying briefly that if these challenges are addressed, it will help them in their work.
It will to a very large extent.
A former state prosecutor at the AG's office, Bright Akwiti, a former deputy attorney general and minister of justice, Kwame Afe Prempeh, said state prosecutors must not take the blame only, as political heads at the AG's office also influence the work of state prosecutors. He called for the decoupling of the Attorney General's office and the creation of an office for prosecuting services.
We have some of the best lawyers in this country in the AG's department, especially in the prosecution. Lawyers in this country do not specialize, but in the AG's department, you go to the prosecution. They've done prosecution for so long, and they are very effective and very efficient. And therefore, I believe that they are saying that they are not doing well, they are lazy, they don't think they are very serious, they do their work haphazardly, everything. I believe it's a bit not right.
But when they go to court, are they giving guidance as to what they should do in court?
No, when they go to court, in fact, they are prosecuted, they are not persecuted. And every lawyer, no matter your standard, you may win cases and lose cases. But when we judge them by one or two cases, things which to me are very political. Some of the things we are hearing from the Attorney General herself about this OM case for which state attorneys are being crucified show that it is never their fault. The Attorney General is the chief government legal advisor. He is the only one the Constitution pay Article 88 gives the power of prosecution to. So that if somebody is involved in a matter and decides not to prosecute the person and the person decides I will not be a witness, it is the decision of the Attorney General. If I was the Attorney General, I'll say, well, you're not going to get witnessed, I'm going to prosecute you. And the state attorneys are being blamed. I believe it is unfair. I beg to differ. I believe that we are being totally unfair to the state attorneys there.
Would you support a review of the process of appointing state prosecutors?
The process of appointing state prosecutors is not problematic. There's nothing wrong with the recruitment process. No, we may need more training. That may be necessary. But the problem to me there is not with the state attorneys there. The problem is with the political heads of the Attorney General Department. If the state attorneys are allowed to do their work as professionals, I believe that we see a different story.
A former Deputy Attorney General and Minister of Justice, Kwame Osei Pempe.
A former partner of the Attorney General and Minister of Justice, Tony Lisa, has challenged Mr. Martin Amidu to report into the General Legal Counsel if he has any adverse findings against him. Mr. Amidu, in a letter issued on the Raging Warrior Mess saga, said the Attorney General, Mrs. Marietta Bruapong, deliberately left out the names of Austro Invest and Mrs. Betty Moldi Drisu in her entry of judgment, which sought enforcement of the Supreme Court's July 29, 2014 order to Woyome to refund the 51.2 million CDs paid to him as judgment debt. Mr. Amidu had argued that because the AG's firm with Tony Lisa was part had had dealings with Austro Invest in the past, there was the likelihood of her showing open bias towards Woyome and treating Austro Invest leniently. But Tony Lisa said he did nothing wrong and has dared the former Attorney General to petition the General Legal Counsel on the issue. Here are excerpts from Tony Lisa's response.
According to Mr. Lisa, Martin Amidu, a senior practitioner, knows what to do if he has definite information of unethical conduct of the nature that he accuses me of. He said if he has any facts to support them, he should take them to the correct forum and he will receive an appropriate response. Mr. Lita stated in an interview with the Graphic Online in Accra, the doors of the General Legal Counsel are wide open to him should he wish to take opportunity of that forum. Damaging a fellow practitioner's reputation so publicly based on conjecture is much more unethical and quite irresponsible. Mr. Lita opined in reaction to Mr. Amidu's allegations to complacency against his firm in connection with the 51.2 million Ghana cedis Woyome saga. Mr. Amidu, in a statement to Graphic Online on Tuesday, March 17, 2015, in reaction to Mr. Lisa's earlier interview, the latter had explained how his firm had had contact with Austro Invest. According to Mr. Amidu, the Attorney General deliberately left out the names of Austro Invest and Mrs. Betty Moody Drisu in her entry of judgment, which sought to enforce the Supreme Court's July 29, 2014 order to Woyome to refund the money. The point should be made very clear that Lita Brew and Company did not act for Austro Invest in relation to the actual claim or steps taken to claim any compensation from government. We were not aware Austro Invest had given Woyome power of attorney to claim monies from government and were not part and did not advise Austro Invest or Woyome on any of the processes leading to the payment of the monies to Woyome. We were instructed by Austro Invest only after monies had been paid to Woyome and he refused to pay Austro Invest any part of it on grounds that Austro Invest did not play any particular role in the financial engineering based on which the claim and payment had been made. The power of attorney given to Mr. Woyome by Austro Invest to pursue the claim with the Attorney General, the various steps that were taken by Woyome pursuant to that power, the meetings with government, among others, were all done without knowledge or advice from Little Brew, counsel stated in response to Mr. Amidus. In fact, it was because Woyome had refused to make any payment to Austro Invest that they instructed Little Brew to take him to court. According to him, he was the one who had arranged the financial engineering and that Austro Invest did almost nothing. They were therefore not entitled to any portion of the monies paid by government. Mr. Luther said he found out soon after filing the claim that the payment was illegal and advised Austro Invest to discontinue the suit, which it did.
That was an excerpt from Tony Luther's response to the statement issued by former Attorney General Martin Amidu.
Investigations by the Economic and Organized Crime Office, IOCO, indicate that at the time the CEO of Goodwill International, Philip Asibit, received $2 million as payment for securing a $65 million funding from the World Bank for the then NYEP, the country had not even officially written to the bank for such a facility. Payment was, however, approved by the former NYEP boss Abuga Pele for Mr. Asibit. An investigator at IOCO, Diana Edu Anani, was testifying at the trial of Mr. Asibit and Abuga Pele, said the former NYEP boss wrote a letter justifying why Mr. Asibit should be paid the $2 million, a report by Beatrice Opon.
Investigations conducted by the Economic and Organized Crime Office have revealed that the document which the CEO of Goodwill International, Philip Asibit, claimed to have been prepared by him with technical support from the Management Development and Productivity Institute, MDPI, to source for funding from the World Bank for the then NYEP, was actually downloaded from the Internet. The said document was Serbia's report on a similar project, which was adopted word for word by Mr. Asibit and presented to demand payment for consultancy services. Given evidence at the financial court, Ms. Eduanane said Mr. Asibit only substituted Ghana for Serbia on the said report. Ms. Eduanane said the MDPI also denied its involvement in the preparation of the said document. She said the first page of the document also bore the names of Mr. Asibit, Abuga Pele, and former Youth and Sports Minister Clement Kofi Humado without their signatures. IOCO therefore contacted Mr. Humado, who expressed surprise and also denied knowledge of the document. The document has been tendered in evidence. The witness said it was strange that Mr. Asibit claimed to be the originator of exit strategies for the NYEP. This is because at the time Mr. Asibit was making those claims, there was an existing exit plan for beneficiaries. She said government was already in agreement with organizations like Azuntaba and Gallywood for the absorption of existing beneficiaries of the NYEP. Ms. Eduanane said further investigations on NYEP officials and the ministry indicated that there was no such agreement between the NYEP and Goodwill International. She stated that when IOCO questioned Mr. Abuga Pele, he said he received verbal advice from Mr. Asibit. Continuing, the witness said Abuga Pele approved a budget of over 59,000 Ghana cedis to be paid to Mr. Asibit and some staff of the MDPI as per diem. During investigations, however, the management of MDPI said they did not sanction their staff participation in the purported NYEP activity.
Beatrice Opon's report. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra. The major stories. Court bailiffs unable to serve Woyome notice of hearing. Tony Lisa dares former Attorney General to petition General Legal Counsel on raging Woyome saga. Load shedding exercise to stabilize possibly by end of this month. Presbyterian Church of Ghana condemns legalization of same-sex marriage by its U.S. counterparts, and hostage siege in Tunisia leaves 19 people dead.
Welcome back. ECOWAS and the Economic Community of Central Africa States, ECAS, will meet in a joint summit on the 7th and 8th of next month to strategize to fight Boko Haram. The summit will be held in one of ECAS member states, yet to be decided on. This came up at a meeting between ECOWAS Chairman President John Mahama and President of Chad General Idris Deby at the Pediasi Lodge near Bri. The meeting with the Chadian president is in line with one President Mahama held there with his Congolese and Equatorial Guinean counterparts last month. The Chadian president has since left Accra. Pascaline Adadevo reports.
The President of Chad and Chairman of the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, General Idris Deby, had a closed-door meeting with President John Mahama. Issues the scars bordered on the formation of a multinational joint task force to fight terrorism within the regional blocs and bilateral agreements. ECAS, at the last AU summit in Yaoundé, Cameroon, expressed interest in partnering ECOWAS in the fight against terrorist groups. Chad, Cameroon, Nigeria, and Niger have suffered the brunt of terrorist attacks. A joint summit has been scheduled for the 7th and 8th of next month to define a common strategy towards wiping out Boko Haram. Ahead of the summit will be a meeting of security experts this weekend in Yaoundé, Cameroon. President Mahama commended his Chadian counterparts for resolving security issues in some Central African states and also for contributing the largest troops to Mali to fight al-Qaeda-linked militants. For security reasons, the venue for the joint summit was not made known.
So following our deliberations, it's been agreed that the end of the second week of April, we will hold a joint summit of the two regional economic blocs at a venue to be decided in Central Africa to discuss principally issues to do with security and the issues to do with Boko Haram.
The president of Chad, General Idris Deby, said it has become necessary to employ a joint force technique to fight the terrorist group Boko Haram. He spoke through an interpreter.
Attaqué avec l'idée qu'une conclusion est faite aux travaux, no doubt this visit was a rather short one, but it enabled us to examine all the issues that we planned to consider. And we are leaving very satisfied. We know that in ECAS there are two countries, member states, which are affected by the Boko Haram threat, whilst in West Africa the two countries involved are Nigeria and Niger. And therefore this is something that we observe, that single-handedly no country can overcome this threat. It is therefore through pooling our resources together that we're going to overcome this challenge.
On the bilateral front, the foreign ministers of Chad and Ghana have been tasked to immediately put in place a permanent joint commission for cooperation. This is to set the stage for bilateral relations in many sectors of their economies. Meanwhile, President Mahama has provided the Chadian government with a land in Accra to build hostel facilities for the more than 30,000 Chadian students here. The Chadian government says it will start construction in the next few months.
Pascaline Adadevo reporting.
The Electricity Company of Ghana, ECG, says it is optimistic the current load shedding will improve very soon. However, the company said it would not make any projections as to when the situation would improve, but gave an assurance that immediately there is any improvement in the generation, it will be translated into stable power supply. The public relations manager of ECG, William Boateng, speaking in an interview, said some power projects are expected to be completed by the end of the month, which would add up to the national grid to improve the power situation. Meanwhile, he said the load shedding exercise is still ongoing, contrary to speculations that additional megawatts are on stream. He indicated that an average of between 400 and 500 megawatts of power is still being shed, leaving consumers to experience 24 hours blackout and 12 hours light.
The Presbyterian Church of Ghana says the approval given to an amendment that recognizes gay marriages by the U.S. Presbyterian Church will not in any way affect its stand on gay marriages. This is so because Presbyterian churches all over the world have their own independence and cannot be forced to accept or reject any policies. The clerk of the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church of Ghana, Dr. Samuel Ayite Nyampong, in an interview with Radio Ghana's current affairs program Behind the News, said the Presbyterian Church of Ghana cannot be forced to accept gay marriages. The U.S. Presbyterian Church, yesterday in an amendment of the church's constitution, changed the definition of marriage between only man and a woman to between two people.
The Presbyterian Church of Ghana is a sovereign church. We do not have any relationship with the Presbyterian Church USA. And even within the USA, there are different Presbyterian denominations. In church polity, we have the Episcopal polity, the Congregational polity, and then the Presbyterian or Reform polity. We subscribe to the Presbyterian Reform polity. But we are not in one general communion whereby all of us meet, like the Anglicans do meeting in London, Lambeth. But each Presbyterian denomination is sovereign. So if Presbyterian Church USA takes a decision concerning a same-sex marriage, it recognizes the ordination of homosexual ministers, it has nothing to do. It has no bearing on the workings or the constitution or the doctrinal stand of the Presbyterian Church of Ghana. We are a different denomination altogether.
Even though it has no bearing on Presbyterians in Ghana, what does it mean to Presbyterians in general across the globe?
And again, Presbyterians in general don't subscribe to the same doctrine or don't have the same communion meeting together. So it will be difficult to find out how it affects. But once a Presbyterian denomination has taken this decision, the danger is that people will generalize that, all Presbyterian churches have accepted same-sex marriage or the ordination of homosexual pastors. That is the danger. And I'm sure that is why you are calling to find out. Is it affecting the Presbyterian Church of Ghana? Are we in this crucial meeting to discuss this issue? Not at all. The Presbyterian Church USA is different. We are a sovereign church. We subscribe to our own constitution. We have our own discipline that we follow.
Clerk of the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church of Ghana, Dr. Samuel Ayite Nyampong.
Experts in water management have called for public-private partnership to initiate projects that will provide sustainable water solutions for over 1 million people in rural communities. Partnerships, according to them, can come in the form of financial assistance, consulting services, and other expertise. In the view of the experts, this is the best way to complement government's effort in providing potable water and achieving its vision of providing water for all by 2025. The suggestions were raised at a stakeholders' meeting in Accra, which focused on public-private partnerships for community water solutions. Yvonne Atilagu has more.
The Beyond the Pipe series is held to stimulate discussion and exchange ideas. It is organized for key stakeholders in the water sector from government, development partners and NGOs in addressing challenges with providing safe, reliable and affordable drinking water. This year's series builds upon the 2014 forum where the Public-Private Partnership PPP's working group was constituted to develop a clear policy framework for successful private engagement in the public sphere of rural water supply. The experts believe that public-private partnership is the only way to reach and is the CEO for Safe Water Network.
The public-private partnership. Ultimately, a successful water station is dependent upon, again, that successful value chain and participation across sectors. And we really are particularly interested in sharing our own experience, these 40-plus water stations, what it takes to run them successfully, financially, operationally, and finding opportunities for collective engagement to advance a proposition that really can, in a much more meaningful way, meet the considerable needs here in Ghana for underserved populations.
The Deputy Minister for Water Resources, Waste and Housing, Samson Ahi, commended the contribution of Safe Water Network for providing reliable, affordable, and safe water access to several communities in the country.
Yvonne Atilago reporting.
A helicopter carrying a consignment of gold from the Obuasi mine of Anglo Gold Ashanti to Accra has crash-landed at Esofia, a remote village near Achimda in the eastern region, according to the Bremu Central Municipal Fire Officer Daniel Aluti. The helicopter did not explode and there were no serious casualties. Three people, including the pilot, were said to be on board. He said it was difficult for fire officers and police from eastern region to get to the location because the helicopter crashed in a thick forest.
At least 19 people, including 17 foreign tourists, have been killed in a security operation at the museum in Tunisia's capital after a deadly hostage siege. The country's Prime Minister Habib Esid, in a statement, said men with assault rifles fired at tourists climbing from buses in front of the National Bardo Museum in central Tunis.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he'll do everything in his power to ensure the well-being and security of all Israeli citizens. Netanyahu made the comments at the Western Wall in Jerusalem a day after his conservative Likud party scored Israel's parliamentary election. With nearly all the ballots counted, Likud captured 30 of the 120 seats in parliament, compared with 24 seats for its main challenger, the Zionist Union, led by Isaac Herzog. Exit polls last Tuesday projected a tight race with the two sides at 24 seats apiece.
Of football. The national under-20 football team, the Black Satellites, last night succumbed to a 2-0 defeat at the hands of the Flying Eagles of Nigeria. The match was the first semi-final fixture at the African Youth Championship in Senegal. The Satellite had a lion's share of territorial dominance but could not convert the handful of scoring chances that came their way in both halves. Nigeria opened the scoring on the 20th minute when Obi Nwobodo's header came off the side post, which was aided into the net by goalkeeper Michael Sai. The Nigerians made it 2 when Musa Mohamed converted a spot kick after being fouled by Patrick Asma. Nigeria will face the winner of today's match, which features Mali and host Senegal in Sunday's final.
To end the news, the main points again. Court bailiffs have been unable to serve Alfred Agbeshiwoyome notice of hearing. Tony Lisa has dared the former Attorney General, Martin Amidu, to petition the General Legal Counsel on the Raging Wayomis saga. The Presbyterian Church of Ghana has condemned the legalization of same-sex marriage by its U.S. counterpart. And a hostage siege in Tunisia has left 19 people dead. The news was presented by Mercy Soa
and Abraham Donko in Accra.